Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing David Greenwalt. He is a former police officer turned weight loss and fitness coach. Not because he was super fit, he actually was struggling with his weight. But since 1999, he has been in the game helping folks lose weight. And he's the founder of the Leanness Lifestyle University. And he's got an 18-week program that is fabulous, and we're going to talk about it. But here's the thing. He brings up something that I come to agree with big time. That we haven't gone from 15% obesity to 43% obesity, you know, from 1970 to 2022 because we forgot about how to count macros or do that. And we didn't forget about input and output or like how to work out. What we've been struggling against is this addiction to ultra processed foods. And I think for a lot of people, that is the big struggle. Now, there's also the struggle to build this whole concept of emotional fitness. And David's going to talk all about it, so I'm not going to spoil it for him. So let's get into this very interesting podcast where David gets real on a lot of things that I have to agree with that are happening with our society when it comes to this struggle to lose weight. All right, let's jump into the podcast. Hey, health junkies. I have a treat for you today. Hey, health junkies, I have a treat for you. I have David Greenwalt on today, and we're going to be talking about something that most of us ladies, we have a love-hate relationship with this whole concept of losing weight. And so David is a specialist in this department. He's a certified wellness coach. As I mentioned before, he's a fitness expert. We just geeked out talking a little bit about powerlifting and all those things. Even a former police officer, gym owner, he's got all the credentials. Let's just put it there. So David, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So, you know, as we were talking when we first jumped on the call, you know, a lot of people, when they think about weight loss, they start to go into that like concept of like, either direction I find. And with women, it's, do I start training for a marathon? Do I do a fitness competition where I just need to like cut my weight and eat nothing but broccoli and dry chicken breast? Or do I start doing CrossFit or something crazy? So I'm going to turn it to you since you have extensive experience in this department. What have you found with women and our crazy monkey brains when it comes to what do we do about weight loss? What are our trends? What are our patterns? And then we'll kind of go into the whole kind of myths and bust little things out here as we go along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the way that you introduced it because that's so common. You know, it's like, what do I do? Where do I start? How do I really do this? And a lot of times people will be a little bit overzealous in forecasting their future self and what that future self has the ability to do compared to what, you know, they can really do. So what we do is we want to figure out where they are. We want to meet them where they are. If someone hasn't, let's just say it this way, if someone's been on the couch for the last 10 years, you know, hasn't really done much movement at all, just in the area of movement, we don't want them getting crazy unless they've really got, you know, some different, you know, a goal or there's something really driving it. And we can go, we take really tiny steps from where they are to the next step. And so there are always progressions, no matter where anybody is. And we'll have people come that are very well trained. They're very active, but maybe their nutrition isn't that sound. And so we can meet them where they are actively. And then we can meet them where they are nutritionally. And for us, and it is progressive, there's the aspect of emotional fitness. So we want to meet them where they are emotionally too. In the area of transformation, I'm making hand movements. If people are just listening, I'm making hand movements like it's an umbrella, the umbrella transformational maturity. And there's a continuum there. And so we want to meet them where they are in all three of those areas. And wherever they are, the idea is to start getting them the real information, the real knowledge they need without overwhelming, take it step by step, make it progressive, and then take them in each of the areas and just progress them so that they're working with facts, they're working with evidence-based information, going forward, dispelling myths as we go, any questions they have, but it's just a step-by-step little progression from there. And no, we definitely wouldn't want someone unless someone already comes to us, you know, putting in 50 miles a week on the road. You know, we don't want them doing anything crazy where they're going to burn out, you know, they're going to get hurt. There's going to be a setback. And just in hearing who, you know, your audience is, that is my primary client. That's who I work with the most. So we're very, very used to the challenges. And me being in my late 50s myself, yeah. I know what it's like to not be 25 anymore, you know, and, you know, the limitations, you got to recover better. You got to slow things down. You got to take care of yourself in different ways.
You know, I think there's something to be said about not, you know, having the maturity, but also having that experience from starting working out as a teenager. We had talked about that, folks, before we got on, and yeah, progressing yourself all the way into your 40s, 50s, and beyond. You know, I laugh when a lot of my patients will come to my office and they'll be like, "Doc, I tried a new workout program, but that young guy that trained me, I just can't do what he's trying to tell me." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, because he's 20 and he doesn't understand what it's like to be 40, 50, or even 60. And this is the value that I find in having someone that's been in the game a long time to understand it. And so
I look at those workouts myself, and I, you know, as you and I talked before the call, I haven't not been in the gym. I haven't taken more than a 2-week break. I take breaks every week, but I haven't taken more than a 2-week break since 1982 in the gym. So even with all that training, I see these videos you're talking about myself, and I shake my head going, "Hey, good for you. Good for you, young man. Good for you, young lady, you know, way to go." And that's not us now.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't mean that we have to put crazy limitations on us, because there are people 50s, 60s and beyond, you know, that do amazing things and can do amazing things. So I don't want to put limitations that maybe somebody else might, because I have seen what people are capable of. But we take all of that into consideration. Where are they? What are they doing? What limitations do they have? What's their history? Where do they want to go? Where are they starting from now? And then we just take it from there.
I like that you're taking it on to perspective here, because I think when a lot of people come to a weight loss program or a fitness program, they're only thinking about what results they have. They're future tripping a little bit. And they're thinking about what they want in 2 days. Not in, you know, 2 years, what they want in 2 days. And then when it doesn't happen, of course, that's when we get frustrated. But the ultimate goal, you know, why are we into fitness? Why do we want to keep, you know, fit? What is that mission there? And I like that you're looking at that, because I find that when we bring things all the way full circle, now it makes a little bit more sense instead of all these drastic diet fads and stuff in that department.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that it sounds just like a tagline, but it really is a mission statement for what we try to do with our clients. And it is because we realize no one who comes to me has this as their first attempt.
Right.
You know, so our mission statement is lose the excess one more time for the last time. And so it really is, everything I do is about coming at it with that in mind, where it's not, because I haven't met anybody except for the way I say it is, you know, I had a couple of boys, we have three kids, and my two boys wrestled. And other than somebody who needs to make weight, a power lifter, a wrestler, I have never met anybody who wanted to lose the excess fat or bodybuilding, figure fitness, you know, that kind of thing. I get it. But I never met anybody otherwise who wanted to lose the fat and gain it back.
Yeah.
No. And so, yeah, it's like, so with that in mind, we come at it from the start with a, let's do this one more time and let's make it for the last time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what, you know, when I was looking through your website and seeing that tagline, I was like, yeah, I mean, that's ultimately where most people are at this point. Granted, there's that I want it fast for the last time,
yes,
but there is that kind of thing. Let's talk a little bit about the concept of this whole calories in, calories out that everyone's been debating, and then putting, as you call them, bumper sticker diets on it. Yeah. You know, how do you guys approach it? How do you look at it for folks in terms of their calories they're expending, and how do they really tailor that for themselves?
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. So I say it this way. I could get a bullhorn, find the tallest building in your city, scream into the bullhorn for everybody to hear, eat less and exercise more, eat less and exercise more. Exactly zero people would change. Mm-hmm. Although from the perspective of a math problem, it is calories in, calories out to an extent. Mm-hmm. Eat less and exercise more. And the way I say it is calories are king, but they're not the only thing. Mm-hmm. And so they do matter the most when it comes to what our weight is going to be when we're looking at consistency. However, calories are king, but they're not the only thing. And just because every single person listening to this has at least a basic understanding of that math equation, mm-hmm. calories in, calories out, you know, must be in a hypocaloric state, must be in a caloric deficit to lose fat. Even though every single person just nods and goes, yep, got it. I already knew that. What they're also saying is when they nod, which we all do, is they're also saying, I already know what to do. I just need to do it.
Yeah.
Right. And when they're saying that, what they're doing is they don't realize it, but they're affirming the mathematics, the mechanics. That's what they're affirming. They're affirming, I know this is a math issue. You know, they believe it's a math issue. And I know that. I know I need less on the input, more on the output. Therefore, I know what to do. I just need to do it. So, but since everybody does know that, even though they may have misconceptions and they may not understand what exactly that means, they have a basic understanding of the equation. We still have seen this rise in obesity from 15% in 1970 to 43% today. Mm-hmm. Well, people didn't forget the math. We didn't go in 1970, we knew the math. And in 2022, we forgot this whole equation. That is not what happened. So what did happen? Well, again, calories are king, but they're not the only thing. And just to kind of tie into that, from kind of a myth perspective on why this increase in obesity is, again, you know, did people, again, forget the math? No, they didn't. I guess we're from the top of a building, eat less and exercise more, and nobody changes. Okay, that's not the solution. They didn't forget the math. Has there been a massive willpower deficiency in the last 52 years? You know, did we have massive willpower in 1970 and no willpower today? No, that's not it. did we run into something in the last 52 years where we now have a memory impairment where we forgot the almighty moderation in all things? Moderation, you know, no, that's not it. Genes, did our genes change greatly between 1970 and now? Not likely, although we can look at epigenetics, but that's beyond what we're doing today. So epigenetics can change things a little bit quicker, but by and large, no, we don't have big changes in genes. So okay, I just went down the things that it's not. You know, so what is it? And since I said you get on the bullhorn, you're on top of the building, you scream at everybody, eat less and exercise more. Everybody goes, I already got that. I know what to do. I just need to do it. And what I would push back on all of that is I would say, it's not your fault, but you don't know what to do. And so you can't just do it. But you can know what to do so that you can just do it. You just don't right now. Right now, most people think that it's calories in, calories out. I just have to solve the math. Mm-hmm. I just have to solve the math. If I just solve the math, if I can just get the numbers one way or another, you know, I'll win this. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot more to it. So calories are king, but they're not the only thing. So we go into what are those things that we really need to know so that we can address them from that nutrition side, from the activity side, and from the emotional fitness side, because that's the biggest. Yeah. And I can, you know, talk about some of those things because right now I've just kind of laid out more of a, I don't know, kind of a philosophical foundational, you know, without much teeth to it. But I can go any direction from here, but all of those things are very common thinking. I don't have enough willpower. It's, you know, I just need to do the calories in, calories out. I know what to do. I just need to do it. And none of those things are true.
Oh man. Yeah. No, those are the things I hear over and over again.
And so now that we know that they're not true, I definitely would like to hear how it plays out in terms of emotional fitness and that side of it, because obviously we've also all been clued into, okay, there's a huge mind component to all of this.
Yes. No doubt. What I usually say is, and this is not to be taken literally, but it just kind of conveys the message. I can teach you what you need to know about nutrition in about an hour.
Yeah.
I can teach you what you need to know with regard to fitness and fat loss in about an hour. With regard to fitness and fat loss, I can teach you what you need to know about the output exercise activity in about an hour. But the thing that's going to keep those two things consistently is the emotional fitness leg. So there's three legs to weight management: nutrition, activity, and emotional fitness. We'll just call it that. And it's that emotional fitness leg. If the nutrition or activity and or activity, if that bus goes in the ditch, you know, it goes in the ditch because of emotional fitness. Something happened, something in life occurred, and we emotionally didn't manage it as well as we can once we have more knowledge. We're still not going to be perfect. We're all still a work in progress. Me too. I'm including myself in all of this. I'm not on some soapbox here saying that I've got it all figured out. But what I will say is that when emotional fitness gets strong, gets to the level where where we're lifestyle ninjas. And all I mean by that is where we can handle kind of anything that life is throwing at us on any given day. When we can do a better job, not perfect, but because we never have to be perfect, but when we can do a better job of managing life and handling whatever life throws at us on any given day, then we will do better at managing what we end up knowing about nutrition and exercise, so that those two things that are critical for weight management and fitness and health stay in line, stay consistent, stay moving in a positive, good direction. It's that emotional fitness leg that's going to continue to drive those things, drive those other two elements. And we focus, you know, heavily on that. So, you know, if I can, just as an example, I said a minute ago that there's not a willpower deficiency.
Right.
A lot of people would be like, man, I just need a little willpower. You know, or they'll say, I have no willpower.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have found in thousands of people over 23 years online that we've been doing Leanest Lifestyle University is people have willpower. They have willpower when they have why power.
Mm-hmm.
So it's why power driving willpower. So willpower is the power to, or the ability to resist short-term temptation in order to meet a long-term goal.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about it and you go, all right, that makes sense. All right. The ability to resist short-term temptation in order to meet a long-term goal. I ask people, just as an example, people who work, people who are of that, or if they have, if they're retired, think back to when you worked. How many times are you late for work?
Mm-hmm.
People go, what do you think, Janine? It's like, never.
Yeah.
You know, they're not late for work. And they certainly don't go to work. I mean, there's people that are passionate about what they do. And there's a lot of people that just go to work. You know, they like it. It's fine. But they're not like, they're not like us. We're just driven. You know, we're super passionate. And they still go to work. And they go to work when they're sick. They go to work when they're tired. They go to work with an hour of sleep. They go to work when they're in a bad mood. They go to work when they just had a fight with a spouse. They go to work when it's on and on and on. Mm-hmm. They go to work when they just got bad news. It goes on. All the stuff that life throws at them, they go to work. And they're not even late. And the reason for that is their why for going to work is incredibly strong. They got to pay bills. They get satisfaction from it. It does this for them. It does that for them. They want this recognition. They want to make sure they maintain blah, 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 blah. All the things that go into that goes into what I call their why power.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the why is strong enough, we find a way. And when it's not, we find an excuse. And that's universal for all of us.
Yeah.
When it's strong enough, we find a way. And when it's not, we find an excuse. And that's true for all of us. So people aren't lacking willpower, but the overwhelming majority of people haven't really thought a lot and haven't been shown steps and strategies on how to develop their why power. Mm-hmm. If you were to ask somebody, you know, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to lose 50 pounds or 30 pounds or whatever it is? The initial answer is usually pretty cursory. You know, it's
superficial, maybe.
Yeah, surface, you know, and that's where it stops. They haven't really thought. They know, I just want to feel better, or I just want to look better, or I just want to whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's, I just want to. Mm-hmm. Even just saying that minimizes it.
It's like, true.
Like it's simple, you know, or like it's just, it's nothing big. I just want, you know. And so what we do is one of the things we do to help increase that drive, which we can kind of tie into emotional fitness for willpower, is develop and strengthen and build this living document called, you know, their why, to mm-hmm. make sure the why power is driving it. Because why power is what drives willpower. You're never late, you know, you're never late to pick up a kid from school.
No.
I mean, there might be this one in a million thing where you're like, oh my God, you know, I forgot Jenny or whatever, you know, and then you just panic and you're, yeah, it's like, oh my God. But other than that, again, bad mood, tired, sick, just had an argument, just got bad, you know, whatever the thing is, you're there. And that's because the why for mm-hmm. making sure your child can count on you and that they're taken care of and they're loved and secure and all these things, it's so strong. Their why power is so strong. They don't miss.
Yeah.
So when we get the why strong enough to continue to drive willpower, because we need that, because this is not something that we can do in a few days.
Yeah. Yep.
If it's something we can do in a few days, you might be able to just rely on willpower with a little bit of why power and just be like, look, I just got to do this. The why is not even that strong, but it's going to take me a day and I'm done. But this is weeks, months, years, depending on where someone wants to go. Right.
Right.
So that's kind of an element, you know, relating to the emotional fitness side of things, because you could think of, you know, why power as the emotional brain rather mm-hmm. than the rational brain. Mm-hmm. And there will be rational factors in the why. You know, I want to do it because I want to reduce the likelihood that I won't live independently.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do it because I want to have a better chance of reducing or removing the medications I'm on. It's irrational. But then if we drill down, we keep drilling 7, 8, 9 layers deep, we get to, and why does that matter to you? A lot of times what I'll ask people is I'll say, and either why does that matter or and who cares about that? And they'll go, well, I do. Why? Well, because I want this. You know, I want to live independently. I want to make sure that I'm not a burden to someone else. Why is that important to you? Well, because I had a grandmother, a mother, whatever, father, whatever it is. And why is that important that you are independent? Why is that important that people see you? Why is it important that, and you just keep drilling and drilling and drilling and drilling. And all of a sudden it started off as I want to lose 50 pounds.
Yeah.
To instead of I want to lose 50 pounds, it's I want to feel this way. I want to live this way. I want to be this way. I want to be, do, have. And when we get to the real 7, 8, 9 layers deep, now all of a sudden, when you're supposed to roll out of bed at 6 a.m. and get a workout in, or you're supposed to prep your foods for the day, you're not doing it because I want to lose 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. You're doing it because you've got all of these really important factors that you've clearly identified that are driving you. That's driving willpower. And that's how I view it. That's how I view willpower working, because willpower, self-regulation, those are limited resources.
Sure.
So we need things that are driving those. So that was a long answer just for why power, but why power is so important. And that's just one element of emotional fitness, but that's an important one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's our whys are too superficial, and it's easy to give up when it's just like, oh, well, I can wear a bigger sweatshirt. I can buy a bigger pair of jeans. I'm guessing that when you went through this situation back in the late 90s and had to lose some weight there, you had to dig deep as to the why too, just to be able to get to that point. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey so that folks can kind of hear that, like, you know, you're not just some guy that, you know, was fit all the time and never struggled. Cause I think a lot of people, I get that. They're like, yeah, you've been fit your whole life. You don't understand what it's like to be like, well,
absolutely. You know, what's funny is I just posted on our private Facebook group, a picture of me in 1994 with a Charlie Brown round moon face. And it was me, you know, I was 29. And I said, hey, I don't know if I've posted this before, but I said, you know, this was me at 29. And they've seen pictures of me. They know my history, but it's been a while, or they hadn't seen that picture. I hadn't even seen that picture in who knows how long. And when I looked at it, I was looking at, there was something related to the holidays coming up. We were looking for pictures and, you know, and I found this picture and my face is big and round. And I'm like, I'm only 5'10", but I was probably about 230 pounds there. And, my clients aren't used to seeing me there. They're used to seeing me at 185, you know? Yeah. So they were like, holy cow. You know, so their reply was like, wow, you know, I can't even imagine you, you know. I said, well, it's true. And that's where I was. So I was there. I was there just before I was 30-ish. And I started off, you know, I started off when I was really young. I want that tiger blood, by the way, back. I want it back. I want somebody to figure out how to get the tiger blood of when I was like 12, 13, 14, and I could eat anything. And, but anyway, so, and then in my early 20s, I started to be able to put on weight pretty easy. It wasn't even like 30. It was like my early 20s. And I could start putting on weight pretty easily. Got to 230 pounds. And then finally I remember when I kind of had at least what I call a hot flash. And I say it that way, male or female, because it's kind of like a moment where you're like, you've got this flash of motivation or this flash of that's it. I was laying on a couch on my back, pretty, you know, pretty supine, pretty, you know, my head might've been up just a little bit on a pillow. I was watching TV out the bottom of my feet. Okay. You can picture that on the couch. There it is. TV's past my feet. And as I'm on my back watching TV out past my feet, my belly was like to the top of my feet. And it was like almost, you know, blocking the TV. And I thought, this is ridiculous. That's it, you know? And here's the thing. I said it, that's it, but it wasn't. But that was like that was the flash. That was like my moment where I said, oh my gosh. And so back then I kind of knew what other people knew. Mm-hmm. You know, quote unquote new, you know, hey, you got to dial it in. You can't eat as much junk. You got to do this and do that. But it wasn't easy. You know, I didn't have the emotional fitness elements that I teach now. I didn't have those things. You know, who of us, when we're growing up, unless you're raised by, I don't know who, gets taught all the emotional fitness stuff?
No one. No.
Right? It's like your parents, as a parent, we've got three grown kids, youngest is 28, and you just do the best you can. And you try to give them the tools that they need to survive and thrive and manage life and be happy and all that. But you're not hitting, you know, all of these areas about focus and gratitude and control and connection and compassion and self-talk and faith. And, you know, I mean, just whatever, you know, you're not hitting all of what would be considered the emotional fitness element. So anyway, I had to work through a number of things, and what I did, which did help me, at least it almost mandated that I get lean, is I competed in bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. So doing a bodybuilding show gave me an immovable date, which I'm saying that for anybody listening, an immovable date is something that's not required, but it is kind of cool. If you've got a wedding coming up, got this coming, got a graduation, got this, whatever it is, something that they're not going to move for you, you know? And it doesn't mean that you're going to do it by then, but having an immovable date is kind of a cool thing. So a bodybuilding show, they don't care. You're in shape or you're not in shape. The date's this. Mm-hmm. And then for a bodybuilding show, you know, for me, it required that you either come in really, really lean or you look out of place.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. But then even though you feel really good and you're like, I feel lean, I feel good. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay close to here. No, you're, no, I didn't. No, I didn't. I went back up, you know, and I was like, holy cow, you took whatever months to do it. But I mean, I went back to it. I'm like, here I am. And I'm like, wow. Okay. So anyway, there was trial and error. There was learning. There was continued education. At the time, I don't sell any supplements now. I was running a pretty large supplement company at the time. And people started asking me, Dave, what are you doing? How do I just tell me real quick, how do I knock off and keep off 30 pounds in an email? And I went, oh man, I said, you know, this whole, and I get it. You want it real quick. And that's where I say, you know, bumper sticker, you know, fortune cookie, back of the napkin answer just doesn't do the justice, because what they want is just kind of the math.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So anyway, that's kind of what my journey was. The majority of my clients don't come from that journey where they had a bodybuilding show that they had aspirations to do. Most of my clients are just everyday people that are really working through, you know, their why and coming up with all of the other reasons that are at least somewhat common. And then some things that are pretty unique to each individual as to what really drives them. But yeah, I battled it and it took me 4 passes to finally do it. And I will say this, you know, I didn't even thought about this, but since you asked, I did like my 3rd bodybuilding show and I kind of used those to get in shape body fat wise.
A lot of people do. A lot of ladies.
Yep. And what happened was I finished the show, and it used to be finish the show, now we get to eat.
Yep.
You know, now we get to eat, and I would put on whatever the weight. But it was after this one show, I asked myself a question, and it was, what is so crazy about what you're doing to get ready for this show that you shouldn't keep doing it for life? Mm-hmm. And for me, now there are some people that do crazy things, but for me, I was exercising an hour a day, 6 days a week. My nutrition was real food. I wasn't doing anything crazy. I wasn't on a starvation plan. I ate a balance and variety of foods and plenty of lean proteins, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, you know, so on and so forth. I didn't eliminate anything except for maybe the last week or something. I might've brought it down to something that was more like, you know, 6 to 10 different foods. But other than that, I didn't eliminate anything. And I almost didn't even want to answer, because my answer was nothing. Yeah. There's nothing you're doing. So why, what are you going back to?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, why are you going back there? And my answer to myself, which is really tough to answer it that way, was because you're hooked on whatever it is that you're eating when you go back to it,
mm-hmm.
or you will be when you go back to it. And I didn't like that answer, because there wasn't anything about the exercise. There wasn't anything about the nutrition itself that was crazy.
Right.
I could have handed it to a physician or a registered dietitian or anybody, and they would have been like, it's pretty good. Way to go. You know, it wasn't 800 calories and it wasn't 3 hours of exercise a day or, you know, anything like that. So, that's my journey. That's how I kind of came at it, and being really honest with myself and just kind of saying, you don't need to go back. There's nothing to go back to. There's nothing you need to go back to. That you can do it if you want, but you can't justify it from a health, longevity, rational perspective. If you do it, you do it. But for me, this was for me, I was like, oh, come on now. Come on now, David.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my story.
Well, I mean, your story, it's like you said, you had 4 passes with it. I mean, I have a lot of women that I've seen over the years who have done fitness competitions or bodybuilding competitions or even marathons, and they've ate a certain way, trained a certain way, fueled a certain way. And then when they stop, it's like binge, game on, you know, back to whatever they missed. Right. And then next thing you know, a year down the road, they're 100 pounds overweight, you know, they're 60 pounds, 50 pounds, whatever it is. And I'm not going to say that I haven't also went into that, because I've trained for multiple marathons, things of that nature, bike racing, and you have your weight when you perform well.
Right.
But then you know, the thought process comes back. It's even probably why I'm a little bit overweight right now, you know, that process in your head. So I think this is really important. And I think another thing that is really important, as you were talking about, you know, real food does matter. And a lot of people will tell me, like, kind of how I'll say to you, like, Dave, people are but I'm eating all the right things. Why are things not moving? Why are things not changing? That's kind of like the number one thing I'll get when someone is eating, you know, all the right things. I'd love to hear your answer to that and how that ties in with the brain and the emotional fitness side of things.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I agree with you. It's so common. People think they're eating the right things, you know, and they're probably a lot of people, if they think that, they might be 75% there. They mm-hmm. might be. They might be a lot less, but they might be 75, 80% there. But so to me, when I think of what are the right things nutritionally, I think of kind of two things. Not, are there more than five ingredients on a label? Not, can I pronounce all the ingredients on a label? I think of it like this. One, is it real food? Two, does it work for you? So what I mean by that is when it comes to this kind of the quick definition of real food that I go by is the natural or unprocessed edible parts of plants and animals, okay, mm-hmm. that have not been changed or modified since their removal from nature. Mm-hmm. The natural, unprocessed edible parts of plants and animals that haven't been changed since their removal from nature. All right. And then I say, and the only thing used in processing or added to that are things commonly found in kitchens. Mm-hmm. Now that's loose, but that gets you pretty close. So where you're like, so even if you had a packaged product and if it was processed properly and its ingredients were, you know, tomatoes and basil and garlic and so on, like some kind of marinara or something, you know, that can be a real food. So it doesn't have to just be, again, single ingredient things. It can be combinations. I used to call it grandmother multiples, you know, stuff that great grandma might've had in combination, but I really have kind of redefined it to real food being what I said. And the only thing added to it or used in processing are things commonly found in the kitchen. So my question would be is, are we at about 90% that? Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of people can't answer that to as a yes.
Yeah.
And the reason that matters is because real food metabolizes differently, responds in the body differently, delivers a different message compared to ultra-processed food. Yep. They are not the same. In fact, I don't even call in my head to keep it straight. I don't even call ultra processed food, food. I will call it ultra processed food. I will call it Frankenfood. I will call it a food-like substance. But in my head, I do that because if we start going down the path of, can food be addictive? And we will likely have to look at that for most people, mm-hmm. which is not addressed hardly at all. It's out there, but not common. It's not in common circles out in the public where we're talking about food addiction or the possibility of some kind of continuum of user, abuser, addict when it comes to food. And the pushback on that is what, when it comes to can food be addictive, people will say, well, you can't be addicted to food because you need it for life. And I'll say, correct. You need food for life. We don't need Lucky Charms for life. And Lucky Charms, in my view, is not food. It's ultra-processed food, Frankenfood, a food-like substance. So we'd say, so a great part of the dietetic community are all things in moderation, okay, which I don't agree with. I think that for a number of people, that's a basic premise, and we need to kind of generally loosely use that. But for some people, that's just not going to work. So what I say is all things in moderation, including moderation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have to moderately use moderation, meaning we can't do it all the time. So, but they will say, all right, we can't be addicted to real food. Or we can't be addicted to food. Correct. But we can be addicted to ultra-processed food. So when someone says, your question was, what do you do with someone, at least initially, when they say I'm eating all the right things? I want to get a handle on what does this person mean?
Mm-hmm.
What's their view of I'm eating all the right things?
Yeah.
You know, because what's probably going to be the case is 60 to 80% of what they're consuming is going to be an ultra processed food.
Yep.
It might be nutrient dense. And that's a nutricentric approach where it's like, the only thing that matters is it nutrient dense? Are the vitamins and minerals and fiber and carbs and fats and proteins, are they all squared away? You know, and if they are, and if there's not too much sugar, salt, fat, or there's some kind of combo, then even with that, we're okay. And what I would look at is beyond sugar, salt, fat, and nutrients, the processing itself, and more research is bearing this out, the processing itself has an impact on how it impacts us.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming at that person, I would say, all right, let's just see what's going on. What are we consuming? And the goal, and we don't need to do this perfectly. The goal is to get to real food by the definition I gave 90% of the time.
I
say 90% because I take the speed limit approach. If I tell you the speed limit's 55, what are you going to do?
You're going to do at least 65, maybe 72, depending.
Right.
No
right.
One's looking.
And as a former police officer, I'll give you an inside tagline that a lot of, just in general, it's not a written thing. I don't want to, but it's 9, you're fine, and 10, you're mine. So if you're 9 over the speed limit, you probably won't get a ticket. If you're 10 or more over the speed limit, then you're taking a chance. So 9, you're fine, 10, you're mine. But anyway, my point is that when it comes to a speed limit, we say it's 55, you're going to do 64 at least. And like you said, 65, 70, 72. So if I say I want you to eat 75, 80%, you're going to be in the 60 range. If I say 90, I'm hoping you can get to at least 80. And ideally, I really would like you to be at 90. I really would. It isn't a bait and switch, so to speak. But at 80%, I'm afraid we're going to be at 60%. And 60% could still be a problem because it's the ultra processed foods, even if they're quote unquote nutrient dense or nutrient rich, that are the addictive substances. And that's where on the emotional fitness side, we could have parts of our emotional fitness that aren't as strong as they can be, which can have us react in ways that aren't ideal nutritionally and exercise wise that sabotage our progress. Okay. We can have that emotional response to a life event or emotional response to an event that isn't conducive to the goal, the long-term goal. And we end up just saying, the heck with it. I'm going to eat this pan of brownies, you know, the hell, you know, life did this and I'm going to do this. And I get that. But beyond just needing more emotional fitness, if we've got food-like substances activating the substance use, the addictive side of our brain, we've got an entirely different animal here at play that's not only physiological, it's psychological, you know, it's a number of things that relate to all things that are addictive from a substance use side. So you can see that it kind of gets complex, but with each person we look at, because not every person is a food addict. That wouldn't be true. And every single person doesn't need to approach this process like a food addict. That's not necessary. But we want to evaluate, again, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, when the behavior, let's say that we've taught someone all the good evidence-based nutrition and activity behaviors, and the person has signed on. They're like, coach, I got it. Thank you. Yes, I'm with you. I can do that. You're not asking for too much. That's reasonable. I see myself doing that. That makes sense to me. Good. And then they don't.
Yep.
Right. And they don't, and they don't, and they don't. Well, we need to look at what's going on with their why. Okay. What's going on with emotional fitness? What's going on where on some too frequent basis, there's off plan incidents occurring,
yeah. Right?
So we've got an emotional component there. We've got a why component, but then we've also got, do we have, and it's on a continuum, do we have a triggered eater situation as well, which can play into it? And if we do, we have a pathway strategy to manage that specifically. And the way I see it, we have to, or we don't win this once and for all. If we just try to get the nutrition and the exercise information out there, if we then bring in, we're just going to shore up emotional fitness. Got it. We're going to get everybody behaving more, you know, in the adult, wise adult kind of area rather than infant, toddler, teenager. We're going to be more adults and wise adults on this continuum of, you know, maturity, and emotional fitness is going to be shored up, and we're going to respond to situations better rather than overreact to situations. Okay. But if someone is a triggered eater, if someone is on the continuum with a tilt toward ultra processed food addiction, because it isn't going to be food addiction in my view, it's going to be ultra processed food addiction. If that's the case, then we need strategies that address that specifically. And we have that. And so that's why, you know, we come at it very comprehensively that way. And we don't shove everybody into the, you know, every single person that comes who wants to lose 20 pounds. Okay. We're going to treat you like a food addict who's a complete emotional mess and you need all these. Well, no, we want to meet you where you are. And let's see what areas need shoring up, what areas need support, and address those areas and just keep building on those areas so that the knowledge just continues to build and build and build without it being overwhelming. So that they really, I guess I'll conclude it with this way. So they really do know what to do.
Right.
So they really can just do it. And so you can imagine we started this off with, I know what to do. I just need to do it. And just with the elements that I brought in here, you go, holy cow, you know, you really may not know what to do. And that's the thing is, I know that most people feel that way, but I also don't blame them for feeling that way because the information that's been put out in media and just through normal educational channels, they don't address these things you and I have talked about here today, or that I've monologued here today. I've hogged the time, I know. But anyway, the things I've monologued here today, which of course is still just scratching the surface, but all of these things come into play for really helping someone win this once and for all. Because the idea is, so many people start this with, I have failed so many times.
Yeah.
There must be something wrong with me. And what I want to get across strongly is, there isn't anything wrong with you. It's that you've not been given the right knowledge and the right tools to manage what's really going on.
Yeah.
You've been told it's personal responsibility. Just buck up, buttercup, you know, and just eat less and exercise more. It's you've just got to push away from the table. You've got to use a smaller plate. Those things are fine. Those can be strategies. Don't get me wrong, but they didn't tell you that ultra processed food is highly addictive for a significant percentage of people. They didn't tell you that your willpower is fine if you've got why power driving it and know how to get it. They didn't tell you that all these things about emotional fitness that are, you know, and then of course, what is real food?
Yeah. Yeah.
People just go, I'm eating healthy. What does that mean?
Lean cuisines that are frozen.
Yes.
And yes. Protein. I wanted to ask you about that protein powder and the protein bars, because that is like the number one thing I buck up against people with is like, it's processed. Sorry. Your Cheetos are the same thing.
Right.
It's not different. How do you approach it with folks?
All right. So that's a great question. So let's apply kind of what I said earlier. So again, instead of, does it have more than 5 ingredients? Can I pronounce the ingredients? All that kind of stuff, whatever the things are that people are trying to do when they look at ingredients. First of all, I applaud anybody that's actually looking at ingredients. They've turned the package around, right? So that's great. But what I would say is, let's use just kind of the 2-component model. Is it real food? Does it work for you? So you look at a protein powder and you spin it around, and I'm throwing this in quotes if you can't see me, protein powder, you know, but it's the first ingredient is whatever. And then the second ingredient is whey protein isolate. And then it goes into on and on. And the list is really long with industrial additives and compounds for mouthfeel and taste and texture and, you know, da, 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 da. No, the answer is that's not real food. Okay. Now, I don't know if it works for you, but that's not real food. So now here's the thing though. So I want to make sure someone doesn't interpret that to mean that I would say, therefore you can't have it.
Right.
That's not what I would say. I would say, can that fit into your 10%?
Mm-hmm.
Right. You're like, you know, let's be honest. You just try to do the best you can with self-honesty and you say, okay, does that fit into my 10% or am I living on this kind of stuff? All right. So can you have that stuff? Yes. Now, I use a whey protein isolate myself, and the ingredients are whey protein isolate,
mm-hmm.
unflavored.
Yep.
Okay. And then I add it to, fruit and spinach and da, 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 da. And so it's still processed. Yeah. We could get into, is it ultra processed? Maybe, you know, because of what's used. But if I've looked at how the whey protein I use is processed, and what I would say is it's processed, not ultra processed. Plus, then the answer for me is, does it work for you? Yes. And let me just, if I can, say, what do I mean by does it work for you? Well, you could have something. An example I'll use is like peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, peanuts, ingredients, peanuts and salt. Well, I said the natural, you know, unprocessed edible parts of plants and animals that have not been changed, you know, since they were removed from nature. Peanuts. Okay, that fits. And then salt. And I said, and the only thing added to it are things commonly found in kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
Peanuts and salt. Hey, it's real food. So you go, pass that test, I'm good to go. Yeah, but you're eating a jar a day.
Guilty.
Right.
Over here. Yeah.
Well, for me, I don't keep peanut butter in the house. Because for me, the answer to does it work for you is usually no. I will find a way to my serving of peanut butter, for example, is a minimum half cup. I don't know what you would do with, you know, it's a minimum like, you know, it's the tablespoon is huge. Okay. And that's a serving. And so, but anyway, you know, there are people where if you answer, does it work for you in what way? Well, does it work for you? Does it inhibit your goals? If it doesn't inhibit your goals and it's real food, or you could say someone could have a real allergy to peanuts and you could say it's real food, but does it work for you? No, you know, right. So you could have allergy. It could be something that you overeat, even though it's real food. And the way I look at it is it real food? Does it work for you? If it doesn't work for you, even if it's real food, then it's got to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in your answer to the protein powders and bars, I would just look at it and I would look at the back and I would say, does it fit the definition of real food? And maybe there's going to be one ingredient like soy lecithin.
Mm-hmm.
You go, all right, it's not really real food, but it's still kind of a moderately processed. Let's throw it in the 10% category.
Mm-hmm.
Still pretty minimal compared to some of the stuff, you know, you've seen, right?
Sure. For sure. The reason I ask about it, there's two things. And first of all, I want to laugh about the peanuts because like I can't have any nut in my house. We have a joke in the family that I'm a squirrel in a previous life because I will take every nut and literally just eat. I would eat nuts all day long.
Yeah.
Every day and nothing else.
Right.
If I was left to my own devices. And fat, you know, that high of a content does not work well for me. Keto, I could be really great on the keto diet, but it still doesn't process for me. Yeah. But then the other thing is going into the protein powders. And this is the things that I find with myself. And I'm sure I'm not alone. The stevias and the monk fruits in there, if there's any sweetener in there, I feel like it kicks off that sugar addiction within me. And then it's like, oh, later in the day, I'm like, all right, I have my smoothie and I got my protein. And oh, wait, what? Where's that chocolate hidden? Where's that chocolate? Like, I'll eat a 99% chocolate bar just trying to like, you know, it's crazy how the mind will play with these tricks.
And there's good, but there's, I shouldn't say this. There's published research, peer reviewed, that looks at just the impact of sweetness. So sometimes I'll say, yeah, we want to keep overall added sugars down. We do for anybody healthy, whether you're overweight or not, just keep overall added sugars down to a low roar, right? But for a lot of people, we have to actually keep sweetness down because sweetness, even in the absence of calories, can drive, you know, the continued search for the calorie dense, whatever. And so again, here's the thing though, some people listening to this are go, that's not me. I can do fine with that. That's great. And if so, again, does it work for you? Great. Right. But just know there's a high percentage of people who really don't know it, who what I hear a lot, I don't know if you have, but what I hear a lot is people will say, I drink, and these are people that are obese and wanting weight loss, okay? And they will say, I drink a diet soda to stave off sugar cravings. It's probably promoting sugar cravings. And if not sugar cravings, it's probably promoting other off-plan eating that's probably carbohydrate rich. But when I say carbohydrates, I mean ultra processed foods, yeah. Not carbohydrates in the form of, you know, fibrous vegetables and raspberries.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what we're talking about. It's almost always an ultra processed food that it creates the drive, the craving to eat more of.
Yeah.
But they think that it's the thing quelling, so to speak, their craving, but it's actually promoting it, driving it. And so we have to look at those things and kind of see where, again, where is this person at right now? Where mm-hmm. are they at emotionally? Where are they at in life?
Mm-hmm.
And are they capable of making adjustments and accepting? Because sometimes the message is delivered, but the antenna is down.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to hear it right now. You know, they'll put a hand up and say, thanks so much, but that I'm just not ready right now. Mm-hmm. They don't really say it, but their behaviors say it. Yeah. And if so, we still remain hopeful in my organization. We still remain hopeful and we continue to not over push, not mm-hmm. try to make, you know, we always say we're not anyone's warden. We're not anyone's boss. Everyone maintains 100% right and agency over their life, and it's their choice, their decisions, and we're just going to continue to, you know, deliver the message and deliver the strategies and the tools and the support so that they really do have what they need. And what I find is, even though they may not be ready now, sometimes in weeks to come or even months to come, they become ready, and then all that messaging kind of just starts to click. And they make one little change and all of a sudden they start to see some progress and they start implementing some of these other things. They shore up that emotional fitness toolbox. They're better life managers and it just all starts to click. So we have to be patient,
yeah.
You know, as coaches anyway, we you know, we have to be patient to make sure that we're not pushing too much. We're going to push, but not shove,
yeah.
You know, because people come to us a lot of times knowing that they could use some extra support and coaching sure. and accountability.
Sure. I'm glad you mentioned the accountability because that is one thing that I definitely want to kind of sum up all of our account in our conversation today is because yes, there's the emotional fitness and then there's the accountability. And for so many people, I find that the struggle is that there's no one in their life that they have to be accountable to, or they might not have the support within the family for their own personal goals. And so the fact that you guys provide that on top of things is huge. I mean, I don't think any weight loss program of any sort could survive without some sort of accountability.
Absolutely. And we have a, you know, a username password protected on campus, you know, like, you know, a part where that's secure, but we also, when needed, will text and email and even, you know, phone someone. And the other thing I'll say about accountability is, you know, I'll say to anybody, you don't want your spouse to be your accountability partner. Yeah. They don't deserve that. Don't do that to them. Let a coach who really understands what's going on, who knows that we may take a butt whipping from you as a client because we've said, we'd like you to do this and this and this. And you say, whatever, or you tell your spouse, you know what that coach told me. Okay. So if you want, but if you're asking your spouse to do it, and let's say your spouse does it.
Yeah.
Wow. That just doesn't work. And so even if you had a spouse that would raise their hand and said, I'll help you, honey, male or female, I don't care what it is, I'll help you do it. Oh God, don't do that. Yeah. Don't put them in that position. You know, and a friend too. What's a friend going to do? You know, you're going to the friend's got, you know, I mean, you know, the friend has your best interest if they're a real friend, but even so, I would say, let us wear the black hat.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, let us be the bad guys, so to speak, when we're delivering not anything remotely purposely hurtful, but just knowledge, information that you, a lot of times, invariably people will realize they needed to hear it, but boy, they didn't want to hear it.
Oh,
yeah. And that's okay. We're all that way. And we all need a coach in certain areas. I may not need a coach in transformation myself, but I need a coach when it comes to marketing.
Yeah.
Okay. Too. Because, you know, right. I've got weakness there. I'm like, I know I could be the, I know what to do. I just need to do it, you know? And the marketing coach goes, do you? You know? And I'm like, okay, tell me what I need to hear. And they're, you know, but anyway, maintaining accountability. We all do better with a coach, especially in the areas that don't come natural or easy to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. And yes, from personal experience, asking my husband to help me with accountability while I was training. Yeah. It's the disaster. Folks. Don't put it on them. It's awkward. It gets awkward.
It does. It does. And he's like, what do I say? How do I say it? Oh my gosh, I'm about to get, you know, blasted here. And you know, please don't do that to your spouse. I don't care which side you're on. Yeah.
Yeah. No, my husband was like, I will not do that.
And there you go. Yeah, you know, thank goodness. That point. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he told me hell no. He's like, you know, it's like, look, it's like, if you ask me, do I look good in these jeans? He's like,
I know the answer.
Same thing. Right.
Yes. Like, yes.
Yes.
Yes. If there's any men listening to this, of course, you know, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I totally agree. And sometimes people do have to figure that out. And here's the thing. You guys went into it with good intentions.
Yeah.
And you do, you go into it with good intentions. It just, it gets messy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Man, Dave, you've been doing this a long time. I mean, you had said since 1999. And so I don't think I've interviewed anybody that's been in the game that long. And so I want folks to hear this. This is longevity in dealing with the ins and outs of what folks are dealing with, and having, of course, your own experience as well. There's a lot behind that. And I think that's something important that I want everyone to really take home, because since 1999, I mean, I was like 3 years out of college or high school. Yeah. So, you know, this is a long time to me, not long time.
Yeah.
So you've been through all the fads, you've been through different genres of things. And so where I get at it is that you're also in that age range where us folks who start to struggle with perimenopause, menopause, hormone weirdness, and slowing metabolisms and stuff, you get the progression. And for folks, you know, listening, guys, this is important. So leanless life's leanless.
I know, it's lean a mouthful. Net.
Leanness.
It is a mouthful. It is.
The LLU, the leanness lifestyle university is where you can find Dave. And tell us, so it's LLU, so LLUniversity.com, and it's an 18 weeks program, correct?
It is. We start, because we are we consider ourselves an educational platform, with all the support, accountability, motivation, and personal support, and everything built into it. Some of the things that, you know, I talked about obviously today, but with it primarily being getting the real education out there. So we start with a course called Lifestyle 180, but that brings in all the coaching and support and all the other things. So Lifestyle 180 is 18 weeks. And the basic information on that, of course, is at lluniversity.com.
Okay.
And then we're also on, you know, Instagram and TikTok and Facebook and LinkedIn and YouTube and, you know, all the stuff like just about everybody is today. But yeah, lluniversity.com is kind of the best place to start, because all the other links are going to be there too.
Okay. And then if they were looking, like say Instagram, since I tend to be a little bit more on that than the rest of the platforms, is it lluniversity on Instagram?
You know, it's so funny when I was a early adopter of the internet. I was on it when it started, you know, when email first started. That's when I first started getting people, if you could real quick tell me how to lose 30 pounds on, you know, in this email.
Yep,
but
yep.
Because of that, I started the Instagram as LLU180.
Okay.
I know. But that's where we are. LLU180 on Instagram.
Okay.
And if you Googled Leanest Lifestyle University Instagram, I bet it shows up, but LLU180 is what it is. So not as common sense as it should be.
Hey, it's okay. I mean, I'm thinking back to like 1999. I mean, all you had was the internet or the email, really, because the internet at that time was really still in its infancy. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, I built the website on dial-up.
Wow.
There was no fast internet. I built our website with it disconnecting every 5 minutes because you had to redial and the modem had to spin up and, Yeah. So it's really great to be here with all the things we have now. And as we were clunky early on, you know, we had the basic program that we started 99 online, you know, that's evolved like the technology that we have too. And so we've just been able to refine it for 23 years. So that's been nice. And, you know, the cool thing is, I'll just say it isn't really, I mean, I don't know, it just hits me. You brought it out of me. I am just as passionate. I really am just as passionate today as I was when I started it.
That's awesome.
And I don't know, it's just really cool working with people, having more knowledge and having more of a solid basis for what's really going on. Mm-hmm. Why are really smart people who come to me really educated, really successful in other areas of their life, really got it together in this area, that area. I no longer question why they're struggling. You know, when I was 30, I would have been more like a common 30-year-old. I would have been like, what's the problem? You know, what's the problem? You know, well, I know what the problem is now. And because of, like you said, the age and experience, I'm a much more empathetic coach because I have the understanding of what's really going on and what people are really facing. Mm-hmm. And I think we do a better job overall now of just kind of meeting people where they are and not being so soft that we don't ask them for improvement, but not overly harsh either, asking them for too much. As you and I were talking at the top of this, you and I were talking about the 25-year-old showing you, as I call them, you know, leaping lizards or whatever you want to do in the gym. You know, you're like, nope, not doing that.
Yeah, no, not my jam. Like,
not my jam.
What are they doing?
You know, right? Yeah, I got a knee that's not going to work. I got a back that's not going to work, or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, or I'm like, I'm going to trip over myself would be the other thing that I've seen commonly. Like with myself, I'll be like, yeah. I'm not that coordinated.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Zumba. I failed Zumba badly, but that's a whole nother podcast. So
okay.
Thank you so much, David, for coming on. And I really appreciate you sharing all of your knowledge and tidbits. I think for folks here, they're gonna look at this and see the longevity in it. And that's what I don't often get from other people that come on the podcast. So way to stick it. You know, stick it in the game for 23 years. It's huge.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me on. I had a lot of fun. It really did. I think you did a great job with me.
Good.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that